St. Paul reminds Timothy as well as us to bear your share of hardship for the gospel with the strength that comes from God. And when we hear this particular word from St. Paul, we might focus on that word hardship, realizing that if we're finding ourselves sharing the good news of Jesus Christ, that not all will receive it as the good news. In fact, the message is very challenging, so much so that individuals will close themselves off from us, even friends, family members, when we try to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ, when we try to let them know about what faith is all about, when we try to instill within them how it is to live godly values, when we try to promote, for example, the sanctity of life and the reason why we all should be opposed to Proposal 3 that's, you know, coming up on the ballots. You know, and all these things, you know, if we're not experiencing hardship when we come to the proclamation of the gospel, then we're doing it wrong. You know, if we're finding ourselves feeling, oh, you know, life is great, life is grand, I have no problems, I have no worries, there are no conflicts, I have no arguments, then maybe you might be a little bit too lackadaisical in the faith. And may need to look at that and realize and understand that unless these things come to pass, you know, nothing else really in the faith makes sense. You know, that's why you have such a consolation when it comes to, you know, hearing the words of the Beatitudes, you know. You know, blessed are those who are merciful, blessed are those who seek, you know, that which is belonging to the purview of God. And so, you know, in all these things, unless we're experiencing that hardship, then we have to truly ask ourselves, am I really living for Jesus Christ? Because that's going to be something that we're always going to encounter. Not everyone is going to want to listen to what we have to say. But the rest of that part in which I quoted from St. Paul to Timothy, you know, is another thing that we ought to focus on, which is that we don't do this on our own. That even though it is difficult, we have the strength that comes from God. Today we celebrate the 27th Sunday in Ordinary Time. About October 2nd, today, is also the Feast of the Guardian Angels. And since St. Paul also reminds us that the fight that we have is not against flesh and blood, but against the fallen principalities and powers of this world, then it's very good for us to recognize that spiritual reality, to recognize that we are in that spiritual realm, and that's the battle that we are called to engage in. You know, sometimes that makes sense, especially if you're talking with your cousin, you're talking with your neighbor, about having them understand something about the faith, and they don't seem to get it. You know, you'll give them a sound argument, thought out argument, you might introduce to them reason and logic, and it just doesn't seem to make the mark, or they seem pretty adamant about how it is that they are going to live their lives, and there's no way that you are going to change their mind. And, you know, part of it is because, you know, once someone finds themselves comfortable in that particular view, then what happens is, you know, the enemy can come and also enhance that tie, enhance that pride, enhance that inability to hear the word of God. You know, such as the case, for example, in the book of Exodus, where you had Pharaoh, huh? He had that obstinacy of heart. You know, he didn't want to listen to anything. No matter how he saw the miracles of God being performed around him, he always tried to make an excuse about how these things came about. And even when he didn't have an excuse of how these things came about, right? You know, you had, for example, you know, right? Moses setting down the staff became a serpent, and he says, well, I can do your magic trick. Come on, he got his magicians. You know, they threw their staffs down. They became serpents too, except Moses' staff, right, swallowed up theirs. Or when, you know, he says, okay, well, you know, that's fine, but, you know, still, I have tricks up my sleeve too as well, Moses. You know, it's like, well, you know, you see the effects of the hardening of heart. And that's always something that first and foremost, you know, we look to ourselves. You know, is my heart hardened to God, or am I truly desiring Him? Am I truly listening to Him? Am I trying to be formed by His truth and to His word, or do I find myself so clinging to pride that I won't even give room to listen to what the other party has to say? So we need the help of not only reason and sound arguments, but also the help of the angelic. Our Catholic faith draws from ancient Judaism and the Bible, and it says that these angels are real. They are pure spirits, they have no bodies, but they can also, if it is conducive to them, well, really to us, the ones who are hearing the message, if it's conducive to us, they will appear, they will manifest themselves in a body. After all, it's far easier to communicate to something that we can see than it is to something that we can't see. They are far from, then, being the cute little cherubs that you find, you know, during Valentine's Day, you know, or the delicate ladies who are playing harps. You know, they are in no way, shape, or form the depiction of angels. And really, you know, that's kind of an offense against the angels. You know, the angels are so above those things. You know, they're so fearsome, they're so powerful. You take a look at the Gospel according to Luke, just the first chapter, and you already have two instances of how people, holy people, these people who are seeking God, react to angels. You know, the angels, right, as they appear in the first chapter of Luke to Zechariah and also to our Blessed Mother Mary, what do they say? Do not be afraid. You know, they won't say that, not unless their very appearance is something to be fearful of, right? You know, if you had a little baby going, do not be afraid, it's just like, well, what? Why would I be? That's just, I mean, it's freaking me out a little bit, but I'm not afraid. So we have here these beings that are certainly very fear-invoking, but always have in mind the closeness of God. So tradition identifies 9 choirs or rankings of angels. And then they're all separated in 3 different hierarchies, so 3 sets of 3. And these angels all, as you can imagine, serve a purpose. So, you know, in the first hierarchy, you have the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones. And then you have the dominations, virtues, and powers. Then you have the principalities, archangels, and angels. So, you know, for those who have done some kind of research into the choirs of angels, you know, you might find that yours doesn't quite match up or it's a little bit different. So the ones that I'm drawing from come from one of the doctors of the church, St. Thomas Aquinas. And he, you know, groups them in such a way as to demonstrate their, you know, how it is that they have received their gifts and how it is that, you know, they communicate things. So speaking of communication, so you might know already that angels come from the Greek word meaning messenger, right? You know, that it denotes, you know, what they do, their office. And so it means all the choirs of angels are doing some kind of communication. And so, you know, if you're ever wondering, you know, what, you know, okay, so the angels aren't playing harps and having a grand old time, you know, what are the angels doing? So before I get into that, angels, even the lowest, huh, they are above man, you know, but they're not omnipresent, they're not infinite, they're not omnipotent. Now, they, along with the fallen angels, you know, cannot read our minds. But just because they cannot read our minds doesn't mean that they don't have any kind of influence. You know, they, as they communicate things through illumination, so it is that, you know, that comes to us in that same way. So, you know, this comes, you know, by way of talking about the fallen angels. You know, they might introduce something to us, you know, to do something bad or some kind of bad thought, and then kind of figure out whether or not that's something we want to entertain or, you know, do we fight against. And that's why it's so important that we engage in the battle of the mind. You know, sometimes we get lackadaisical about, you know, fighting against the things in our mind and just think, oh, it's just in the mind, it doesn't really affect me anyways. But little do we know that, you know, if it's a temptation of the enemy that places that there and he sees that we're acting a certain way, that he might think, okay, I think I struck gold here. I think I can get this person to fall and sin if I just keep on harping on this particular temptation. And so, you know, if you find yourself, you know, having that, you know, just it keeps coming and you're struggling with that, well, that's probably why we're not fighting immediately when those thoughts start coming. You know, just like you have someone who is a trained interrogator and is able to figure out, you know, someone is telling the truth or someone's telling a lie. You know, angels, right, their powers are so above man that you just think about, you know, how just among us, you know, some of us have that ability. Well, angels can have that. They can sense the fluctuation that's happening within us and the little things that are happening with our eyes, and so know exactly like, ah, you know, I think I've hit something here. And so that's why it's so important that, you know, as we're hit with temptation, that we fight immediately against that. We give no quarter for those things to remain in our mind. So while they can't read our minds, if we're praying, let's say we're praying to our guardian angel, or like St. Michael the Archangel, you know, if we're doing so in our mind, they can hear us. You know, so if we have in our thought that I'm praying to my guardian angel, your guardian angel is going to hear you. So, you know, there's no doubt about that. So that's something why we can enter into that kind of mental prayer, and it actually is effective. It actually works. So what do these nine choirs of angels do exactly? Well, so like I said, they're grouped up in three different hierarchies. You kind of think of it as a ladder, where you have the first hierarchy, you got the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones. And so all of these choirs of angels extends immediately to God, and so they aren't sent to do any exterior ministry. So the seraphim, because they find themselves closest to God in the order of nature, they have excess in charity. You know, as God is love, you know, it makes sense that the angels that are closest to God have the greatest love for God among the angels. So what the seraphim do is that they purify others by illuminating them, whereby the minds of the persons are purified of any lies and come to the knowledge of truth. Then you have the cherubim, right, as you have, so have them come to the knowledge of truth. Cherubim are known for their excess in knowledge. They are called in Latin the lucentes, insofar as they know the divine secrets in a way that far exceeds the exceptional, or they know things super eminently. So lucentes here means shine, or causing to shine. It's interesting that St. Thomas Aquinas then draws from this and says that because of this, you know, the angel that fell, right, and became Satan, you know, he was first known as Lucifer, right, angel of light, probably makes sense that he was noticed as the cherubim on that rank, right? He was one of the higher ranking of angels. But according to exorcists, you know, in their spiritual battles, you know, it seems that they're always referring to Satan as the fact that he used to been from the highest order. So there's some argument about that. So, but anyways, either seraphim, cherubim, a fallen seraphim or cherubim, and you know, something there, of course, that, you know, even though we have you know, St. Michael the Archangel being an archangel, how beautiful it is that, you know, because he was with God, was able to overthrow Lucifer. So the cherubim illumine the minds of angels and men about the beauty and secrets of God and the beauty of the order of things that God has created. And then the third, the last of this hierarchy are the thrones. So through the thrones, God exercises his judgment. God gives them knowledge to illuminate the lower choirs of angels concerning what is to be done. Then you have the second hierarchy. You have the dominations, virtues, and powers. And that they consist of things dealing with governance. So dominations direct and command what has been given to them concerning the plan of God. And then all these ranks that fall under the dominations, they don't disobey those orders. What is communicated to them by the thrones, right, so that's the one immediately above them. So the thrones gives them the form of knowledge, and then the dominations receive the form of knowledge and then have a desire to execute those things according to the will of God. And then going down to the virtues, they act upon the commands. So due to their strength, the virtues approach divine things without fear and offer the ability to get things done. Their tasks relate to the execution of divine works outside the order of nature. And if you happen to be someone who enjoys watching the stars or getting to know the planets and how they move and how they orbit and everything, it's also said that the virtues are the one who regulate the motion of the celestial bodies. Then you have the powers that impose order on subjects. They figure the how to execute the commands so that the other angels can do it. They are also known to ward off evil spirits. The third or lowest hierarchy deals with the principalities, the archangels, and the angels. And they deal with the application of the orders, commands, and knowledge given from the choirs above them and executes the divine commands that have been passed down through the choirs. So what they do comes from the higher rankings of angels. And that's why, not only, am I going through this exercise of talking about all the nine choirs of angels, just to see this, just to recognize how it is that God has created them, but also how everything just really trickles down, and how it is that things get to us from God. So the task of principalities pertain to the common good in human affairs. They are to instruct those who occupy the positions of leadership among men concerning administrative matters of their rule. They help to determine the governance of various nations. So now you have, with this third hierarchy, things that are being involved in things that are quite close to us. Obviously the governance of nations is something very near and dear to us. So while you have the lowest ranking, angels announcing things, right? Again, messenger, you have the archangels announcing great things. St. Thomas Aquinas says that the archangels announce those things which pertain to the human good of one person, so making an appearance to one person, but also this particular good will be something that will profit others. So you have that with the coming of the Archangel Gabriel to our Blessed Mother Mary. The message was for her, but then we see how from that message it was able to help many. The archangels are known as the princes of the angels. Last and certainly but not least are the angels. St. Thomas says they are found in the lowest order because they immediately announce things to us. They are the closest to us than the other angels and immediately execute those things which God wants to be done. The angels illuminate the minds of men and introduce into their imaginations the images of things which they may need to know. Now, they act in accordance with natural law, which you and I should be operating from. Sometimes we deviate that because of concupiscence and sin. But the guardian angels, the angels are always trying to go towards moving us, moving our lower appetites to God by following the natural law. And so sometimes, this is something that is so instinctive that because we have this draw to the natural law that we might wonder sometimes, well, was it my guardian angel that led me to do this good thing, or was it something within me that felt I need to do this good thing? So, I suppose one way that we can find a distinction is, especially if we're not in the habit of doing a particular good, but then all of a sudden just find ourselves, I feel like doing this and I know it's good, and for some reason I've been putting it off, but today it just seems like a good day to start that, and then all of a sudden you start that good habit. That's probably due to the fact that your guardian angel has been leading you to do that, and then you happen to respond to that invitation. Now, so all of this leads to one of the central points I wanted to make here, because sometimes we think about, okay, that's nice to know the choirs of angels, that's nice to know how God created that, and then to know, how does it affect me, where does that stand? Well, so the very identity of one's guardian angel revolves around the individual for whom he was created to guard. I'll say that again. The very identity of the guardian angel, so this is like the reason for his existence, the reason for his being, like he has no other identity, no other calling, no other, I guess in our terms, vocation by which to live his life. You know, his very identity revolves around the individual for whom he was created to guard. You know, so it's all about you. And I think this is something that we need to take to heart, how God, in his infinite wisdom, you know, desires this connection with us so much so that he gives us the help of a guardian angel. And you know, this guardian angel, you know, is not just simply there when we call upon him. You know, otherwise he's playing poker with his other guardian angel buddies, right? Or, you know, watching God flicks or something and just kind of like, okay, waiting for a call. Pat call you yet? Nope. Mm-mm. You know, I mean, they're not, right? I mean, their whole identity wraps around you. And I know it's something that, of course, obviously we're supposed to be fighting against anything narcissistic and, you know, but, you know, I guess if you have those tendencies, hey, you got an admirer, you know, right? In your guardian angel, you know, I mean, that's one way to put it, right? You know, just like whatever you do, you know, your guardian angel is always there. And I think this is such a beautiful reality if you think about how sometimes we long to hear from a friend of ours if we're having a bad day, or you know, maybe we got a close relationship with our cousin and you know, it's just, you know, we're trying to reach out to her and again not making that connection, and we just kind of think, well, no one's there for me, right? And then we just kind of get down on ourselves. You know, your guardian angel is always there. You know, your guardian angel is always there. And you know, because of the fact that, you know, his identity wraps around you, you know, that should tell you something. Not only that, but, you know, so, right, all the angels were given choices, right? That's why we have those who are with God and those who are against God, right? You know, the demons. So, the first choice of your guardian angel, so it's up to him to decide whether he wanted to do this or not, but it was to love the individual whom he was assigned to guard. So that's the first and foremost thing that the guardian angel, you know, in coming into being, is doing. Is choosing to love you. Not choosing to obey the command of God, not resigning oneself to this task, but is chosen to love you. And so I think this is a good reason why, you know, each one of us should foster a devotion to our guardian angel, because he does so much to try to help us. So there's a lot with angels, huh? You hear, you know, seraphim excess in charity, cherubim excess in knowledge, and it goes down, even the governance of the celestial bodies by the virtues. And, you know, then you have your guardian angel that tries to move your lower appetites toward God, you know, with the whole point of loving you entirely so that you can find yourself with God forever in heaven. So one of the ways in which we grow in our relationship with our guardian angels, you know, aside from praying the angel of God prayer and just speaking to our guardian angel, you know, is to pray the chaplet of Saint Michael, the archangel. It's a very beautiful chaplet that has with it a few promises, the most prominent being that, you know, there's the promise of continual assistance of Saint Michael and all the angels during life, and then also after death, deliverance from purgatory, not only for those who practice this devotion on a daily basis, but also for their relations as well. So we shouldn't take for granted our guardian angels and the angels who do so much to help us on the path towards salvation. At times when we think about hardships and how it is that we feel that we are alone, that is definitely not the case. It is a lie of the enemy. We have our guardian angels to help us, to guide us, to form us, and to lead us to where we need to go, and to be for us the strength of God.